Hi, everyone. This is Brad Fanchai, your host at Shift and Steer. Hey, you're listening to a rebroadcast. It's from a couple years back when we turned the mics on Pete Shaporis, our co-host and friend. Ask him about his career, how he got started. Basically, we wanted to know how he became a hot rod legend. And we heard it from him. Unfortunately, I was out of town that day. And of all the Shift and Steer episodes that I've done, the one when we turned the mics on our own Pete Shaporis, I wasn't here. Now, the reason we're doing this is because, unfortunately, on January the 6th, 2017, Pete Shaporis passed away, unexpectedly. It was tough for all of us here at Shift and Steer, because to us, he's the Hoff. We called him that affectionately because of all the Hall of Fames he'd been honored to be a part of. Now, Pete and I go way back. I knew Pete all the way back to the late 80s when I met him while I was still business partners with another legendary hot rod builder who's no longer with us, Boyd Coddington. Boyd and I had Hot Rods by Boyd and Boyd's Wheels. And Pete came by, and I remember the first time I met him, I thought, that guy's cool. He's got swagger. And it never failed. He's always been the guy who was cool and had swagger. I looked at Pete. I admired Pete. Pete had started in the 70s, Pete and Jake's. It was an icon in the industry. But he didn't stop there. He moved on. He was the vice president of marketing for SEMA, and then he started PC3G. I remember when that Astro van pulled up in front of our shop in Stanton, and I said, what the hell is PC3G? Well, it was the Pete Shaporis III group. He later told me that he kind of thought later on that maybe that wasn't the best name. Don't have anything that tricky, because people got to be... They got to know you. It wasn't marketable. And that's when he came up with the brainstorm to license from the founder of SoCal Speed Shop, Alex Exadius, the name SoCal Speed Shop, revive it, and there was never any looking back. He changed the world of hot rodding forever in many ways. And we miss him here at the show already. So today we decided to look back, give you a few thoughts, and I promise you this isn't all we're going to bring back, because Pete, when I started my radio show many years ago, it was called Street Rod and Custom Radio, and I asked Pete to be my co-host. We were a syndicated radio show, and he was right there to do it with me. Then when I started the podcast Shift and Steer, he was on the top of my list of co-hosts, and he wanted to be there with me again to help forge new territory into the podcast world. And then when we were joined by Matt DeAndrea and Aaron Hagar, he was thrilled. He used to tell me, Brad, I look forward to Fridays, coming to the studio and doing the show with you guys. It makes me feel young. Well, Pete, you've always got a place at our mic. And you'll always be a part of Shift and Steer. So I want each of the co-hosts to just say something about Pete, because he did mean so much to us as both a friend and a co-host. Aaron, what are your thoughts about Pete?
Man, I tell you, this comes as a huge blow. It's hard. You know, Pete, you guys have known Pete for so long. So much of this industry has known Pete, you know, a lifetime. I've only had the privilege of knowing him a few years, but, you know, we became very, very close, my wife and I, to him and his family, and it's hard, man. He was a great friend and gentleman and mentor, you know. He helped me get through a couple things and make decisions on things and kind of liberate my thoughts, and of course, you know, there's so much to learn from Pete and his expertise. His life, he's had such a full life and been such an influence. But, you know, I hear the word gentleman come up a lot, and it's really true. He was always a gentleman. And he tells all these stories about being a badass. I don't know that part of him. I just know the sweet man, you know, the gentleman. So that's how I'm going to remember Pete.
Now that's good. And I keep hearing that again and again, that you know, all across the board, how people remember that, you know, they went to him for advice, or he was their mentor, or, you know, and always listened to their what they needed, and always listened to their stories, and always made them feel like, whether it was a 5-minute conversation or a 2-hour conversation, that, you know, that was one of the best conversations they've ever had. And so,
yeah, and you know, Pete brought out the best of people too. You know, he helped you make good decisions, and I know. You know, SoCal has my baby, Red Voodoo, over there. And, you know, there's a lot of things to be done, but Pete really helped me make good decisions. And it's about halfway through it now, and I'm going to count on those decisions and those plans to finish her up, and that'll be my physical manifestation of of Pete.
Yeah.
He loved
that
little car.
Well, I think
it's going to be hard.
I think the one thing that Pete did in life that I think now that he's gone will continue to do and carry on is that he put a smile on our face before, and when we think back all the great memories of Pete and all our travels and shows, he'll once again put a smile on our face.
Absolutely. Cheers to that.
All right, Aaron, thanks. And
thanks, Brad.
I appreciate it, buddy.
You got it. All right. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Okay. And Matt, I know that you spent a lot of time with him doing Shift and Steer and going on our trips with us. What are your thoughts, buddy?
You know, it's interesting because, first of all, I've had the best time of my life in spending the last couple of years with Pete. And, you know, Pete is, I mean, it's, Pete's maybe 25 years older than I am, and he's an icon in the space. So I actually kind of grew up hearing about Pete and idolizing that guy in for everything he's done in the hot rod world and just the automotive aftermarket world, from his early days of working with you, Pat, and working with Billy Gibbons and ZZ Top Cars. And one of the first, like, car shows I've ever seen, it was with Pete, with interviews with Pete. And I'm like, this is the guy. You know, and then when we were able to put Shift and Steer together, you know, the thing for me about this show was being able to work with you and Aaron and Pete. I mean, I don't need to do another podcast, but being able to work with you guys is the whole reason why we do this show. So I will tell you that I'm absolutely crushed that Pete will no longer be with us. It really was. Pete was sort of the backbone of our show, but just a wonderful, wonderful guy. And being able to do shows with him every Friday, have conversations with him, go outside and look at cars and talk about cars. And he was excited just, 4 weeks ago, he came into the studio and he showed us all these designs and sketches for this new car that he wants to build. He's like, it's my Roadster design. I'm using this special windshield. Like, he was just ready to leave us. He was so excited about that build, and I hope somebody still does that build. I don't know if that was for a client or whatever, but I hope he does that build. But Brad, this part I know you remember. Like, we went to Syracuse National last year, and I got a chance to you know, we had a long day, did shows, did autographs. It was a lot of fun. Met wonderful, wonderful people. And then afterward, you know, Pete's like, you know what, I'm not ready for a nap yet. Let's go to the bar. Let's have a drink. And Pete and I just sat there for like 2 hours. You know, Pete was losing weight. He was getting healthy. He was eating salads. We sat at the bar. We had a couple of drinks. We ate salads. You know, we ate salads. But I'm telling you, that 2-hour conversation, you came in, you and Aaron both came in like toward the end of the conversation, or maybe it was you and Charlotte came in sort of toward the end of the conversation, and Pete was telling about just his life as a kid and getting into hot rodding and then, you know, meeting Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top and his wonderful stories about those guys over the last, I don't know, 40 years. You know, those guys just being like the best of friends and cruising Sunset Strip when it was barely nothing. And hell, even ZZ Top was just starting off, you know. And I'm just telling you, man, the passion he had to hear it in his voice, see it in his eyes. He had so many more stories to tell. And that was really one of the reasons for us creating this podcast, that I'm going to absolutely miss the opportunities of, you know, he has an entire lifetime of hot rodding stories and just life lessons that we can all learn from. And we're really going to miss that. I especially am going to miss that. But I'm telling you, the last time I saw Pete, we were at SEMA. We were recording shows. He was in his beautiful white shirt that's always neatly pressed.
Yes.
You know, he's always got he's got like 15 of those he travels with. They're perfectly pressed. And after SEMA, he treated every day like that last special day after SEMA with all of us. You were there.
Yeah.
He gives everybody a big hug. He says goodbye. I'll see you in LA. And that's what I remember about Pete, is that kind of very genuine guy. And the last time I was physically with Pete, he was giving me a hug, saying goodbye, and I'll see you in LA. And he texted us, you know, the morning he passed, basically, or the morning before, and he's like, I'm not feeling so well, so, you know, I'm going to miss the show. We're like, no worries, do it next week. And, you know, it's weird because I have so much to say about Pete, but also it kind of chokes you up and then makes you almost speechless, so... and honestly, look, I feel I'm absolutely devastated. I feel bad for his family. Guys like you, Brad, have known him so much longer than I have. I can't imagine what you guys are going through with this loss. But I'll tell you that in the short period of time that I've actually known Pete, and you know, again, been a fan for two decades, but actually known Pete for the last few years. Yeah, he was on my show CarCast maybe 5-6 years ago, and right there, just genuine guy. Matter of fact, he came in and he was so inviting and so heartwarming. He was one of the first guys that when Adam Carolla needed some work done on a car, we just said, just go to Pete. Pete's just a solid guy. Like,
yeah.
And it was something small. It was like something on the Lamborghini, like underneath the hood, it has like a quilted headliner. And Pete's like, yeah, I could totally get that done for you, you know. And he did, and it was perfect. And he came in, like, installed it himself. And it was just one of those things, like, just speaks to the kind of guy that he is. But anyway, I could go on and on. I mean, there's a reason why we've always called him the Hoff on the show. He's in more Hall of Fames than ever. I just went through the list again the other day, and it's 2 pages long. I mean, he's every possible award you can imagine, or Hall of Fame, or anything, and in the automotive aftermarket, Pete has earned it, rightfully so, over his career. So, you know, God bless his family, and I'm really going to miss it.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man. It's just one of those where you just don't expect it, and he meant so much to all of us here on the show, and he contributed so much. He brought just his glow and his enthusiasm and his genuine, he's a genuine hot rodder. You know, he is, like you said, he's the man. And we all respected that so much. And we're going to miss him. And I know all of our listeners are too. But the one thing that will never go away is that we have all these hours that we spent with him in the studio. And we'll never, you know, forget that. And
yeah, you know, but before you do that, I will say, I'm sure we will do more shows as a tribute to Pete.
Oh, absolutely.
But the piece that you're talking about is the special show where we got Pete to really to tell his story. So please listen to Liz, listen to Pete, as modest and humble as he is. Let him tell a little bit about his story, and I'm sure we'll be talking about him for forever. But you know, like you said, he was a great hot rodder, but it's really more about the man. It's about the person.
And definitely.
The Pete that I know is the kindest, nicest guy, you know, one of the nicest guys ever.
And it's also one of those things, Matt, that, you know, we can't express in words. There's just no way. You know, he did so much. He meant so much to so many people. And we're just fortunate that he was part of Shift and Steer so that, you know, we not only got to enjoy the glow of Pete Shapiro's, but everyone who listens to the show in the past, now, and in the future, he'll always be part of Shift and Steer.
And the wonderful outpouring of respect and admiration for Pete since he passed, all of the social media messages, the text messages we've gotten, Facebook, Twitter, everybody that's known Pete. And, oh my God, the amount of people who didn't know Pete but only knew of Pete,
yeah,
heard him on the show. Thank you so much. I'm eternally grateful for all the kind words everybody has said.
You know, so just in memory of Pete and to remember who he was, what he was like, we're going to re-air this, which goes back to when we turned the mic on Pete and asked him to tell us his story in his own words.
Shift and Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjor, Pete Shapiro's, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Shift and Steer. I am Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, and we're here with Pete Shapiro's, and
hey,
we got Aaron Hagar on the line. And
we are
a man down, Brad Fanshaw, and apparently it's his contract negotiation time. No, we're done with that. No more contract negotiations. We sent Brad on assignment, and his assignment is go see his mom in Arizona and celebrate her birthday.
He hasn't seen her for 14 years.
Yeah. He's like, nah, I don't want to go out there. The old bat's nuts.
Is that what he told you? Because he told me the same thing.
His mom is awesome, by the way. If you guys met Brad's mom, she's amazing. And then he keeps sending her, like, I think she's 84.
Yeah, today she's 84.
84
yeah.
Today? As we're recording this, 84, right?
Yeah, birthday today. Yeah.
And we were here not too long ago, and he had, like, I think a Suburban or the big truck. Was it the pickup truck or the Suburban? He's like, oh, I'm going to get this painted and polish the wheels. I'm going to send it out to mom.
Yeah.
She's got to be, I don't know, 5 foot nothing.
Yeah, she's 5 foot zero.
Like 85 pounds.
Yeah. That's it. That's exactly right.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart. When we go out to Bear Jackson, she comes out sometimes at night, you know, for drinks and dinner or whatever, and she's amazing. So happy birthday. Happy birthday to Brad's mom. So, guys, you know, Aaron, we've had these conversations a little bit about you, a little bit about me, a little bit about Brad, and now that we got our man Pete back, Pete has such a fascinating story. He's been in this industry for let's just say a couple years.
Yeah, it's been a few years. I was thinking about that, and I have a birthday coming up here. Pretty
Do you?
Soon.
Wait, when? When's your birthday?
December.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be 73.
Yeah.
And,
wow. Are you going to make it?
Well, I didn't think so about 3 months ago. I was kind of curious about whether that was going to happen. But I had a metal shop, and I was taught how to weld, and I had a buzz box. It was my uncle's buzz box, and which everybody's had. And I actually took some money to weld up some parts in my dad's garage when I was 14. So I've been in it 60 years about.
Wow.
Yeah, so been around a while.
Awesome.
Yeah. Wait, I'm gonna have Pete tell us a little bit about his history, but I'm going to run through this.
And after his history, you're all going to want to call him either Master or you're going to want to call him Sir.
No.
You can't call him Uncle Pete or Grandpa Pete or Daddy Pete because, you know, he's way too important. And unfortunately, I just found that out, too, reading a little bit more of what I didn't already know, and I went – I'm gonna have to change his title now. Make it more formal.
I don't know. So listen. I'm gonna quickly run through this list. This is just a little bit of the accolades about our man Pete Chaporis, and then he can tell us how he earned this list. Okay, I'm gonna go through it quickly.
You know, I shouldn't have sent you that.
Here we go. Ready? Route 66 Hall of Fame, SEMA Hall of Fame, HRIA Hall of Fame, National Rod and Custom Hall of Fame, Grand National Roadster Show Hall of Fame. He was awarded the Detroit Autorama Builder of the Year, Grand National Roadshow Builder of the Year, Legends of Speed Lifetime Achievement Award, Wild Tech Performance Leadership Award, HRIA Service Award, the Legends of Hot Rodding Award. He's also received the NSRA Hot Rod of the Century Award for his Chop 34 three-window coupe, the California Kid, famous car, and he's won the 2012 America's Most Beautiful Trophy Award. He's got every single – they had to create three or four Hall of Fames just to put Pete in him.
Well, you know what the Hall of Fame thing is, don't you? Listen, the Hall of Fame thing is they give it to you when there's nobody else to give it to you because you get old. Because
here's your old and not dead award.
Yeah, you're old enough to get one of these now. So
that's a hell of a list.
My back hurts with two awards, man. You must be like hunched over by now.
Pete has to carry all of them wherever he goes. By the way, he has to bring them with him. So, So look, let's get into this a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about how you got started. You got started off, you know, you were.
I just got started because my dad was in it. I never had a choice.
But, I mean, before that, though, did you have kind of an engineering background? Or just you started off as a kid, cutting, welding?
Yeah, it was just intuitive. I mean, you know, it's like guys that are intuitive to being involved with computers. I mean, I don't remember not wanting to build cars. I built model cars first. I mean, it was toys. And then it was model cars, and then when I was old enough, I bought my first car when I was 14, and 2 years later I was driving. It was a Model A coupe. I had the first small block Chevy in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Guys will say, well, what do you know about flatheads? Nothing.
Nothing.
We took them out of cars because I was an overhead guy. So we did Chrysler's, Cadillacs.
We know they didn't make any power, so
By the time I got around to it, flatheads were zip. And now they're all the rage. And guys, it's funny. Guys will come up and say, you know, I got a flathead and I got problems with it. I said, that's why we took them out of our cars.
Yeah.
So,
over the years, a lot of parts came available for that. They tried to improve them.
They've done a good job. I'm not going to take any shots at them. The guys that are working on them now, they're doing great with them. But in our world, in my day, they were worn out because they'd gone through World War II and the guys had put so many miles on them that they were all dead, you know. So, anyway, we were the first overhead genre of car builders back in the 50s, mid-50s and early 60s. And I just don't remember not having a hot rod or some kind of a custom at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I'm doing it again right now.
Have you actually ever had a job, like, outside of the industry? Did you, like, as a kid, did you bag groceries? But not a professional job. Like, you've never had a career job. This is all you've done forever.
I made my money at 75 cents an hour, and I saved $1,500.
At 75 cents an hour?
75 cents an hour.
Nobody saves $1,500 at that
rate. I had two jobs after school, and what they were is I worked in a pottery factory. And
sexy.
And I made, we made pottery for Knott's Berry Farm.
Wow.
And on the weekends, I got extra if I would climb down in the vats of clay and scrape the blades.
Okay.
Yeah. Super dangerous work, really. And it was. And it's
let's
funny.
Throw this kid in there. And if you he know, dies, you got a little
think
extra
about
money.
All the stuff they have today. You know, wear the goggles and the suits and the gloves. No, we're talking about cut off Levi's, barefoot, no shirt, no eye goggles, nothing, and get down in there and scrape this mud off these things at 75 cents an hour. And I saved enough money to build this car. You know, I bought the car for $75 from a check it out, Filipino gardener with a wooden bed in the back.
Yeah.
It was a black Model A coupe in 1930. And then we built this car, and I had it in the car show when I was a senior in high school. I drove it there, you know, and had a lot of help from my pals because I didn't, you know, I learned from them. And
even the 75 cent an hour blade scraping job, the whole point was just to get a car.
It was all it was. It was all I was driven.
Yeah.
And my, I lived in El Monte, so we had a gang. Everybody's in a gang. You know, you had to be in a gang.
Yeah, of course.
And so I was in this gang, and the gang was getting in trouble, and I got in a lot of trouble. But the car is what saved me. And out of the 27 guys in our gang, 25 of them went to jail, and my friend and I, who had a 53 Chevy, we didn't go to jail because we worked on cars and had dates. And if you were, and if you had a car to work on and you had a date, then the guys in the gang, you had a pass.
I love Pete's motivation as a kid. Cars and getting laid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, I talked to Billy Gibbons and the rock guys, and it was guitars and girls.
Yeah.
And that's what kept them out of jail. I mean, I lived in a really tough neighborhood, and so that's what kept me straight, and that's what I tell kids today, you know. But it was funny, when I got the car, I was a straight-A student, and when I barely got out of high school, I was so devoted to my car and my jobs to get the money, and my dad would... He didn't match me dollar for dollar, but he would match me pretty good, you know, like if I wanted to buy, check it out, Corvette valve covers in the day, $10 a pair.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
$10 a pair for 9 fin, not 7 fin, but 9 fin.
Wow.
And yeah, I'd go to the Chevy dealership and buy them, and I begged my father to split that with me, $5.
$5,
and
Dad.
He had the money. He made me work for that. So not only that, now I'm mowing lawns on the weekends. And to get this pair of valve covers because the motor was crying. Every time I walk in the garage, the motor would cry, Pete, I need some valve covers.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, but that's what it took. And I bought a used set of carburetors, 2.4s, Rochesters off of a Corvette. It had probably some kind of dubious start in life, probably stolen. But, you know, I made my own bucket seats, and, I mean, it's all by hand. And then I...
So you started welding and fabricating.
I was fabricating
as a teenager,
when I was in high school.
It's just trial by error, right? Like just...
Yeah, it was all trial by error. And then I had some older guys that were really cool guys in this car club that I ended up joining that were... I was like 15 or 16. These guys were in their 20s. They all had real jobs. And some of them were driving like brand new 57 Chevys. Guys had... One guy had a chop 5-window, 32 5-window with a caddy in it. It was painted. I mean, a painted car with interior in it.
The guy's rich.
Yeah, well, it was. He had a real job. He was driving a truck, you know. So, I mean, he was probably making $1.50 an hour.
Wow.
That's double, you know.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a car family, and my town that I grew up in was car wealthy, car rich. I mean, there was hot rods everywhere and customs, low riders. The Hispanic kids that I went to school with were the best. Our school was 50-50, the split. So people talk about the 50-50 split in L.A. It's always been a 50-50 split.
Yeah, it's not new.
But the car people weren't gang people. And that's a misnomer in our world. The car people are car people. They're hardcore.
Yeah.
I mean,
really
hardcore. And all our car friends, we all went out together.
Yeah.
We all hung out at
car guy gangs are different. Like it's the negative connotation of the word gang that makes you think like it's a bunch of troublemakers.
Well,
but
we had gang. No. We had some really badass gangs. I mean, the real deal.
You know,
guys getting knifed and killed and overdosed on dope and all that. But the car guys, we all hung out at the first In-N-Out. We all hung out at the first Hula Hut. We all hung out at the first Henry's when there was no other drive-ins. We were there.
Wow.
The first In-N-Out in Baldwin Park. I mean, we watched them put the sign up. I mean, because my dad had a full custom. He bought a new car every 2 years and had them customized at Gil Ayala's over in Whittier. And so he was young, and he was still showing off his cars. Well, he'd load up a bunch of us pimply-faced kids and haul us around. He had long side pipes on it. Cutouts were open, man. 55 Buick slammed on the ground.
Yeah. Your mother must have loved driving around in that thing.
My mother actually loved driving
really?
Around.
Really? She's like, you should put the cutouts in this thing so I don't have to hear you talk all the time.
Yeah. Well, my mom and dad had one car. They didn't have two cars. So on Wednesday.
Your dad would hot rod them?
On Wednesday, the car was hers to drive around because she would go do the banking and all that stuff. And everybody loved my mom because she was driving this hot rod around.
That's great.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
so
Brad's
cool.
mom now, by the way, driving his hot rod and his trucks around. Yeah, she's always doing that.
Nothing's changed. Yeah. So.
Well, Pete, I have to tell you, it's one thing to be a part of history, you know, to be an integral part of history, but you are the hot rod history. I mean, you not only were a part of it, you're a pioneer. You were so immersed in it. It's like, it's so wonderful to know someone in this life and being the enthusiast we are of our generation, to know and look up to you, you know, because we're it's awesome, man. It's awesome.
What we ended up doing was we were 10 years behind Alex and his hot rod people, Alex Exidius.
He's the, you know, for people that don't know, he's the one of the original hot rodders.
One of the original hot rodders, yeah. But the founder of SoCal Speed Shop, and then at Wally Parks, founder of NHRA. So they were 10 years, we're 10 years behind them, okay? So I was going to the drags 10 years earlier with my father. I watched, we were there at the very first opening of the Pomona drag strip. I watched Alex race his coupe, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So and then Alex became my friend. Now, how in the world did that happen, right? I mean, that's a really weird deal. I was just over at Art Crispin's place checking out a paint job. Art's still alive, and I'm thinking coming over here, Art Crispin is my friend. I mean, a real friend. I mean, how does this stuff happen? Well, it's because we're all hardcore. And Tommy Ivo, who I built, I copied his car because I just walked, you know, he walked on water for me. He's my friend.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to drop names, but so that 10-year span, there was a time when we were riding bicycles and those guys were drag racing. And then eventually through Wally Parks Museum and all that, we got to know these guys really well. And through SEMA, I met Wally and Alex through SEMA. But the other guys I met at the drag strip just got older. You know, I suddenly had a car, and they'd come wandering over, and we'd start talking. And
You know what, Pete? It's no different because I talk to guys. I talk to guys in the automotive space now, and my brother all the time. And he's like, Pete Chaporis is your friend. And I said, yeah, he is. He's a good dude. I'm very fortunate to have Pete as a friend. And even me growing up, I would hear about SoCal, and I'd try to swing by one of the stores and hear about the stuff that you've done in the past and Alex Exidius in the past. And then over the years, as I sort of got into this world, you know, one of the early calls I made, you know, was even to you. I was like, hey, Pete, you should come to the studio and do CarCast or something with us. And we've done it a few times now, but I was like, hey, it's Pete Chaporis is here. Yeah. Thank you for that.
But, you know, I don't even think about it. It isn't even part of my dream. You know, it's like, because it's something that you love and all you got to do is find somebody to share it with.
Yeah.
And it's just a no-brainer, you know. I mean, when we came out of your gig, and I'm driving home in my Roadster, I'm thinking that's nice. Those guys really did like what we were doing, you know.
Yeah,
it's nice to be. I mean, everybody that we're involved with right now, you know, with all of you guys, with Aaron and Brad and yourself, it's hard to explain. There's no ego or anything. It's all about the realistic. It's real. This is all real. You know, everybody.
Yeah.
I'm interested in what you guys are doing. And
the industry that we play in is the great equalizer for us. It's like at any point, like we can, when we start talking about this stuff, it's just everybody's on the same page and everybody gets it and everybody's on the same level. And learning from everybody's jobs and what they're doing, and
it's really
and
fun.
That's what I love about this group that we do this show with is you know, Brad and Aaron and Pete, like everybody's so different, but
we're all the same.
But it works, you know, because we're all still talking about the same thing, just from different aspects of things.
I mean, I'm still working every day, and my guys kicked me out on Friday, which is really great. And I got to tell you the truth, Mike. You can call my wife. This Friday for me is so refreshing. I just love coming down here. And when I was going through my the surgery crap when I was off for about 3 months, I really missed it. I mean, I really do.
Yeah.
I come over here and it's just this whole nother.
Yeah.
It's a whole new life for me because the cars and your knowledge of what you do is just like, I don't know none of it, you know? I mean, I can't. I don't know any of the numbers, you know? I'm learning about LaFerrari, you know, what are they, 599s?
A 599's a different one.
Different car. Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm going back and I'm looking at it, and why do they call it that? Because that's how many they're going to make. Okay. You know, I mean, it's like, it's just a completely different world.
Yeah. But no less interesting. Like it's fascinating to learn about it all.
It's fascinating.
It's fascinating to learn about it all.
I'm thinking to myself, how does a Ferrari collector keep up with that bunch of folks? Because all they do is just keep cranking them out.
I was at a dinner last night, and a guy was asking me about that. He's like, "Hey," he's like, "it's weird." He goes, "Can I go to the dealer and buy a Ferrari?" And I was like, "Can I get a new one?" I was like, Yeah, you sort of can, but it's like you kind of maybe want to start a little bit, you know, like I told him, it's like, you know what, a good car to start with like a 355, right? It's first year of power steering. It's a great car. It's fairly affordable, less than $100,000 maybe. And start there. Drive that for a little while. See how you like it. And then you go to the dealer and you trade up to something else. Or then maybe you get a list on one of the new ones.
Well, that's what I'm doing right now. Yeah, I just bought an AMG 55.
Yeah.
And that's my first exotic, whatever they're called.
Yeah. No, well, you got a CLS.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. The AMG, the CLS.
Yeah. 50. Yeah. So I'm just, so great, it's my first car. One, and I've experienced
it. Is it a 55 or 63?
It's a 55.
Okay. Wow. So a little bit, what year is it?
Wow.
A six.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a little bit older, but
so
yeah.
It's got all the whistles and bells, 500 horsepower.
But that's the thing, is like a car that size and that comfortable and quiet and heavy. And then you're like, this fucking thing's fast.
Well, it goes. I built 10 and 11 second cars for the street in a hot rod.
Yeah,
this thing runs 11 seconds
with the air on and the radio.
Yeah, and it goes almost 200 miles an hour. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm. Yeah. And of course, I experienced it immediately. We had a hole in an airbag, so we had the car for a day, and it's in the shop. So it's perfect.
It's German, bro.
Yeah, it's perfect. I didn't expect it not to be. I bought insurance. bumper to bumper.
Yeah.
And so we're driving it around.
You're already getting your money out of it.
Yeah, I've already. So it's. I already knew this because I got a friend of mine with one. So he says, "Don't be surprised." So we're going to work through it and get it right. And I'm going to put it in my body shop and tune up all the paint. It's got a beautiful interior in it. It's only got 40,000 miles on it. It's a low miler.
Yeah.
But see, now I've got my hot rod, and it got me a custom.
I know, and your Mercedes is going to be an awesome hot rod for you as well. Okay, so here we are in the life of Pete Chaporis, and he's a ratty little kid. He's making 75 cents an hour, and he's cutting up his cars, and he's buying valve covers with his dad. Eventually, you're going to get a real job.
Yeah, I did get a real job. I actually got a real job, and I was really lucky. There was this place called Clayton Manufacturing Company, which my father went to work for before the war, and during the war. He was drafted into the Army, and he was considered to be so valuable that he actually got out of the Army. He was in it for a year and a half, but they said, this place is falling apart. We have to have him back in material control because they became vital to the war effort. So he really lucked out. Anyway, make a long story short, when I got to be 18 years old or 17 years old, I got a job there. And then I went in the Marine Corps, came out, and went to work there. And I worked there for 5 years. And I worked in the product development lab, but I'm building cars at home.
Yeah.
Well, what the experience I got there was, I found out how to run a company. This place was stunning. And it just was like osmosis. It just went into me. And at the same time, because I'm working on product development, I'm learning how to run a lathe and a mill, and I'm making parts for my hot rod.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a boss that's letting me stay over at night. And I'm cranking out all this cool aluminum stuff for my car, and I build this really bitchin' T Roadster, and it's killer. It's got Weber carburetors on it, and I'm learning how to make it run because Webers don't work on the street, but we made them work on the street, and I made a plenum chamber for it because they don't vacuum and all that stuff. Got it on the cover of a magazine. Like, you got to be kidding me. I got on the cover of a magazine.
Yeah.
So I did. And people start coming around. What do you do? You know, what are you doing? Well, I do this and this. You know, you ought to try maybe having your own shop. Nah. You know, I can't do that. My dad would kill me if I quit my job because he came through the Depression, right? You can't do that.
Right.
You can't quit your job. Well, you get killed for that from the old country. These guys are from the old country.
Right.
So I'm thinking maybe there's something to it. So then I decide, you know, this car's so bitchin'. I can hardly drive it. I mean, I drove it all the time, but he had to clean it every day. Clean it, clean it, clean it, clean it. It had polished Hallibrands on it and all kinds of weird stuff. So I thought, I'm going to build me a real hot rod. So I found a chopped 34 three-window coupe that was pretty beat up. So I made a really nice car out of it. It took me about a year, and I painted it black. And I thought, I'm going to make a real hot rod out of this thing. I'm going to flame it. So I flamed it.
Yeah. Black with flames.
Black with flames. So Manuel Reyes helped me. Guys, and I was working. Oh, I went to work. I quit my job and went to work at Blair's Speed Shop. My dad was going to kill me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was pissed. He was so pissed.
There's no future in hot rods,
There's
son.
No
you
future
can't make
in
money.
Hot rods. Are you shitting
Waste
me?
Your life.
And you're going down to that shithole working at Blair's where that place was just grease everywhere and stuff laying around. So, but I went there. And Blair paid me good money. I was really – and I told Phil Lukens, the guy that ran the place, I said, I'm going to work here 2 years, and I'm going to open up my own place. And that's what I got. So I finished the coupe, and it really came out really different. And at the time, guys were building T-buckets and resto rods. You know, resto rod is a brown Model A with black fenders. You know, Aaron, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So we were building those diamond tufted interior wire wheels. Yep. Cars really confused. So this really changed things up. People are going, oh my God, you put the hot back in hot rodding. And so the car got really, really famous. And then I got a telephone call from a guy named Howie Horowitz, and he says, we're filming a movie, and we think we'd like to use your car. I says, where'd you see it? He says, I'm over at my son-in-law's house, and it's on the cover of Rod and Custom magazine. Come over to Universal on Monday. I think we can use your car. So make a very long story short, they used my car in a movie called The California Kid and went viral. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, Kid was a TV movie. With Martin Sheen.
And mm-hmm. Nick Nolte.
And it was, I want to say it was about like a dickhead sheriff that was.
Yeah, it was chasing street racers
and killing these people, kids. Yeah.
Well, not, it
and here comes Martin Sheen and this California kid.
Yeah,
and
Martin
his race
Sheen
car.
Was playing. Yeah, Martin Sheen was playing the James Dean character. And anyway.
But your car is—it's on the movie posters. Yeah, it's on California.
The car was the star.
Yeah.
So it went.
I mean, Martin Sheen might disagree, but whatever.
Yeah, Martin Sheen was really cool about that. He was really great. He had his family. Charlie was out there, and he was about 11 years old.
Wow.
He was drunk. No.
But he had a couple of whores with him.
Yeah, that was okay. So anyway, so it started playing in movie houses. It was so popular. And then it went to Europe and played all the movie houses. So the car got really famous in Europe. I mean, huge. We didn't find that out till later when they started asking me to bring the car over to Europe and do gigs. I'd never done a gig.
Yeah, what's a gig with a car?
It's a gig.
Like, what do you do?
Is that gig? Is that like an old man? Or so I ran into a guy named Jim Jacobs who was already pretty famous. He was a writer for Rod and Custom magazine, and so he built this coupe at the same time I built my coupe, and it was on the cover of this magazine. And we hit it off really well. So he says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm working at Blair's." And he goes, "We should do something." And I said, "Yeah, I think we should do something." We both had the idea about the same time. So we rented 3,000 square feet in Temple City.
How long have you been at Blair's at this point?
2.5 years.
Oh, you got that extra half a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that guy was like, "See, I told you."
Yeah, and then
you're never gonna leave.
And when I left, my boss says, "Just how much ink do you think you can get from one car?" Things been on like 80 magazine covers.
Yeah. And I got gigs. Yeah. Do you have gigs?
Yeah, you got a gig?
I've got gigs.
I got a gig. You got a gig? Did you have it lanced?
Yeah.
So we started this little company called Pete and Jake's in Temple City, and for the first year, we made two families. We made $15,000. $15,000 for two families for the whole year. The second year, we made $60,000 for two families for the whole year.
Oh, my gosh.
That's it.
Wow.
Now, this is the kicker. The third year, 7 months into the year, we made $500,000.
Wow.
Jeez.
We went viral.
That's yeah.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Awesome.
So we didn't just hit a home run. We hit her out of the park, and it was because of our product line. And what we did was we brought safety to the industry. We we didn't create an industry, but we sure as shit improved it.
Yeah.
And so that was my
fuck,
other
life. That's not 75 cents an hour scraping pottery blades, by the way.
No.
Now you're so, good for you.
So we had this, then we had this problem of not knowing what to do with it because it was like dope. We had this. So
don't touch it. It's money. Don't touch it.
Yeah. So then we hired this guy to come in and help us, and we almost lost it. We almost went bankrupt because we didn't know what to do with it. So our solution was hire more people. So we had three people, and now we had 22 employees.
Oh my God!
And we lost our ass because we didn't know how to do it. And so we were selling stuff to people and putting $20 bill in every box. We were losing money on everything. So this guy showed us how to make money.
Yeah.
And then a year went by, let's say, just roughly.
Yeah.
And everything just was, fuck, it was just flowing like, it was amazing. I bought me a big house. Jake had a house, and we bought new cars. Because we owed it to ourselves. We were scraping rock bottom. And then the next 8 or 9, 10 years were just beautiful, and we've been credited without.
And that's why you're in 47,000 Hall of Fames and awards.
Well, what happened was is that we,
because you were. But here's the thing: you're also doing it at a time. It's not like you were.
It didn't exist.
That's what I'm saying. You were creating. You're part of this. You know, part of these legends that created this. Car culture.
I mean, nobody.
Industry,
all the guys that
industry.
Would do it would tell you the same story. They probably wouldn't be as open as I am, but they'll tell you the same story. Alex would tell you the same story. Lou Center to tell you the same story. Iski to tell you the same story. All of a sudden, when it hits, and you got to remember, there's no computers, there was no internet. This is all word of mouth, and 85% of the business was east of the Mississippi River. Those guys are all sitting around with these turd cars, bless their hearts, and we were selling them front ends where it didn't shimmy anymore. They're going, we can drive more than 35 miles an hour. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because what they'd do is they'd drive through the shimmy and get going 80, and everything was fine, and then they'd say, oh, God damn, now we got to slow down, put the brakes on, and the car would come down and it'd shake. Right, Aaron?
Very much so. In fact, I'm about to address two of that with your help.
Steering stabilizer bars, buddy. Steering stabilizer bars.
Oh, I fear I need a lot more than that.
Okay. Well, anyway, so that.
Oh, pizza man.
That went really. And then we started getting smart. See, we quit building cars and focused on product. And the product just went through the roof.
Wow. Because people still love building cars, and they just didn't have, an awesome fabricator.
Yeah. What we did was, and this, when we get introduced to our peers, what we get introduced as is we're the guys that brought safety to the piece. That's what we did. If we didn't do anything else, we made the stuff safe. The cars were really dangerous, and we were able to sell them welded parts that could bolt on or weld on to the front end, and everything else was Heliarc machine. Everything was welded on and completely super strong. Where guys were trying to weld stuff onto axles, it would break off, and a guy'd lose his radius rod and go, "Oh, good, now my car's headed right for the ditch."
Yeah.
So no more ditch runs, and it stopped all this injury. It just stopped it. So that's what made it. That's what made us who we were. And we were successful with it, And then we got copied. And we got copied.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of a badge of success, though. It's kind of a badge of honor. It's a little bit piss you off, but also
it
like,
lasted until
nice.
1988, which was good, 13 years.
Yeah.
Longer than most marriages. And then I went to work for SEMA and became vice president of marketing with my friend Chuck Blum. And we just did. I built a big building over there, and him and I worked great. We were really good friends. And then I got cabin fever and built a house and a big shop up in Crestline, and I was going to retire up there. And I'd still be there, except my wife got cabin fever, and I wasn't going to risk my marriage, Carol and I've been married 50 years. And so I moved back down the hill, and I told her all the whole time we were up there, I said, we can't move back. I spent all the money. It's up here, girl.
Yeah.
So we went back and started groveling again. And then a few years after we moved down, we had another paradigm shift. I saw an opportunity to hopefully talk to Alex about, buying his name SoCal Speed Shop name. And we've been talked about. That's a biggest genius marketing, blah, yeah. blah, blah, you know. What it was yeah. I hated my name. I hated PC3. I hated it. Couldn't get a good T-shirt out of it. It was horrible.
Yeah.
PC3. I didn't. I don't like to call your name the Pete Chaporis Group. I mean, what was that?
Pete Chaporis Group.
But what I found out was...
It's an amazing ad agency, possibly a law firm.
Yeah, but what I found out was, like, a lot of guys that have had, like, rock and roll bands.
Yeah.
You know, if you belong to a group that isn't called something, you can't go out and say Joe's such and such's rock and roll band. People go, who the hell is that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I was in Excalibur. Oh, that band. Yeah, that's a really good band.
Yeah.
And what are you? Well, I was a lead singer. Oh, really? So I thought because my name was Pete that they would, but that's not it. I sold Pete and Jake's to a guy who's doing really well with it. So I had to come up with something brand new. So we bought the legacy name, man. SoCal Speed Shop is iconic. So we just reintroduced it, and people thought it never stopped, and it stopped in 1965.
Yeah.
And they'd say,
and you brought it back like 19...
I brought it back 90, in 1997. And guys would actually call and say, I bought an intake manifold for you last year. It was like it had never left.
Yeah.
And we did the same thing. Right to the moon. Right to the moon. Instantly, like the next day.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a great move. Wow. Turns out Pete's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. But
it's a fascinating story because, like you were saying, as a kid, and you're working with your hands, but then you got yourself into jobs, and you notice everything around you. And I can't put enough emphasis on this when on the job training is what I like to call it. On the job training is you're back at Clayton, I think you said Clayton, and you're doing your work, but you're also noticing the buying, the selling, the shipping, you know, people's payroll and what it, you know, who's running the company. Like, you're starting to notice there's an actual infrastructure involved. And then how do you sort of apply that to, you know, what you do next? And, you know, and you build another company, you hire a bunch of guys, you see the good, the bad, the money come in, the money go out. Yeah. And then, you know, all the while, you're still doing what you love. You're building cars, you're making parts, but you have to be able to, like, if you're going to do this on your own, like you've done so successfully, you got to learn so much more. Well, marketing, advertising, payroll, the Clayton, insurance. It's like the Clayton, there's so much.
The Clayton experience was definitely what put us on the map for manufacturing. I had the manufacturing thing absolutely dialed. All the tooling, the flow, the warehousing, and all that. So that was absolutely magic. Went to Blair's and learned how to build a car from scratch professionally. What we didn't have, we had the marketing down, but what we didn't have was the infrastructure to make the money stick. We didn't have a problem in making the money. We had a problem in keeping the money. That's what we had to learn. So I brought a professional in and said, you guys are out of your minds. Yeah. What are you doing? Are you burning it? And we were burning it. We were burning the money.
Yeah.
We didn't know how to keep it. He says, you have a barrel of money and you just put a match in it. He says, so you got to do this. He says, what's your multiplier?
Huh? And what's that?
He said, if something costs you a buck, you put a 2.5 on it, multiply 35% out, and see where you are. If that's a good number, then you can have somebody sell your product for you. If you haven't got a 2.5 multiplier on it, then you're screwed. So we start checking everything. Shit. We were just like giving it away.
Yeah.
And then, but it didn't take long to get in that groove. And we found out that people were prepared to pay for it. They were the first guys that were getting parts from us. Man, they got the free deal.
They got the best deal. Yeah, they had the best deal.
Guys says, well, last time I bought that four bar kit, it was $150. I said, well, it's $225 now, buddy.
Yeah. But that's like starting any business, though. Like, that's kind of what you. That's kind of what you do. Like, you offer some deals and you give out some parts, and still today, right? Like, that's what the business is.
Yeah, guys, what's your business plan? We both just looked at each other and went, huh?
Yeah. See, back then it was just a mistake. Now it's an actual marketing strategy. Hey, man, let's give out some parts to some guys that we think are key in the industry, and if they use the parts, it'll help.
Yeah. Okay,
that's a marketing strategy. It wasn't like, we don't know what to sell it for, so let's sell it cheap.
You know, when in the old days, there was actually a vice president of sales and marketing, because even in those days, the big professionals, they still didn't know what that was. They still didn't know what marketing was and what sales was. They thought it was the same thing. And they didn't split it. It hasn't been that long.
Yeah.
To where it was actually two different divisions. Guys, sales and marketing.
Sales and marketing. They never went together for me, by the way.
Yep.
In any business that I've ever run, I've never had a sales and marketing department.
Yeah, but I've worked for companies that had sales and marketing.
Yeah, that's not one department.
The guy, and I thought to myself, well, what is exactly he? What do you actually do?
You know?
You poor bastard.
So here you are still doing SoCal Speed Shop.
Yep.
You're building amazing cars, award-winning stuff.
Yeah.
With Jimmy Shine, and he's been there for a long time.
Well, Jimmy Shine, he's opened his own place.
He's got his own place, but you guys were, everybody's such great friends, and Jimmy's a good guy. And you, out of SoCal, under your reins at SoCal since 97, have come an amazing collection of cars, tons of parts.
Oh.
A fabulous brand, by the way. You're keeping the SoCal brand alive, and there's shirts and swag. Mm-hmm. And then, TV shows and awards and
gigs.
And,
we're doing a lot of gigs.
Gigs.
We're doing
more gigs.
I've got my gig. We've got gigs going already. We got about 8 gigs lined up for next year.
Yeah,
we've got.
That's great.
And I talked to Jimmy just a few days ago, and he's doing really good. And we're going to have breakfast as soon as he gets ungigged. And we're gonna,
yeah,
he's doing. He's actually doing okay.
Now, we launched this show, Shift and Steer, at SEMA last year, and that's coming up again soon. But at SEMA last year, Billy Gibbons was on our show with us and showed us a hot rod that you guys worked on, the Whiskey Runner, right?
Yeah, that's
another one of you guys' just amazing creations that you did over at SoCal. And, yeah, that's a badass
car. In fact, we've worked on a really neat deal with Billy where Jimmy was instrumental. We have a thing called the father of the car. In other words, there's one guy you go to no matter who works on it, so that he knows where all the screws are, and he's the man, right?
Yeah.
It's like a
project manager, but with a much cooler name.
We didn't want to call him the mother of the car because
it's got a much cooler name.
Father of the car. And because the father of the car, now his car's ready to tear down and get painted and put back together, so the father of the car would be the guy that actually would put the car together. So we're going to move the car over to Jimmy's new store,
uh-huh.
and have him and maybe one of my guys will go over there.
The Whiskey Runner.
I
didn't even think you guys were going to paint it. I thought you were going to put the trim on the side and leave it metal.
It's a moving target, but it's going to get painted. Yeah. The reason being,
I feel like you just sort of crushed Aaron's soul by putting. I kind of like it all in metal and.
I love that. Well, gorgeous.
The problem that we've got with it is that it's going to be used a lot, and if we leave it alone, it's going to die.
It's going to be so hard to maintain like that.
Wouldn't you say, Aaron?
I totally agree, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a cool car. I'm excited to see it when it's all done. But you guys have done some amazing stuff over the years, and congratulations to your 50 years of marriage with your lovely wife.
Yeah, that's a God.
You are not in Hollywood. I don't know what you're doing over there.
Yeah, 50 years.
What?
He's not Hollywood. He's bucking the trend. Aaron, I got a question for you, buddy. We're going to shift gears here a little bit. Have you done any land speed racing? I know you get your motorcycles out like a maniac, and you go to Laguna Seca and Sears Point, and you race your motorcycles. Have you done any land speed racing?
No, in fact, I have never been to Bonneville, and I want to go so bad. And now with all the Bonneville stuff going on, which I hope Pete can shed some light on, I'm really bummed because I would love to do that. I mean, I'm a cornering guy. I'm more of a technical driver, just in the short career I've had and experience. But I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind the whole experience, whether I can drive or just be there. I'm in either way.
I don't know that many people know this about you, but Aaron is a motorcycle racer. Aaron's a motorcycle racer. And I think there's the one time he went backwards at Sears Point. Did you go the wrong way on the track?
Well, Well, yeah.
She's stammering. What are you stammering
You're
for?
Not supposed to do that, Aaron, by the way.
After a track day, I didn't realize at Sears Point that they had lined up the street drag races, like, literally back-to-back to our race day. So I was with Keith Code. I've been working with Keith Code schools for 20-something years in their cornering and safety schools. And as a track marshal there, just for good track time and great friends. And all the radios were off. I had all the radios. I collect all the radios. I collect all the flags. And here I am going down the drag strip. And all of a sudden I see these people as I crest the hill. They're waving at me. And I'm like, what? And I see, you know, I'm
you're waving back. Hi, it's me, Aaron. I got the flags.
And, and the cars are running and they're ready and staged. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm at the end of the drag strip. It was a horrific moment in life. But once in a while we make mistakes. But I've been down twice in my life, once on the street the first week I started riding, and once on the track recently, a couple years back on my Motard. I just got into a corner and chopped the throttle in the lower gear, and it started to drizzle, and so I lost traction and ended up in the mud. But you know, I've been very fortunate not to get hurt. Now, I didn't race per se. I did a lot of track events, a lot of open school events, and as I said, I've been working with Keith Code for many years. But I played with cars too. I had a 68 Mustang Fastback that I used to play around with the Shelby Club, number 67, and I used to race at Laguna Seca a lot. And I really enjoyed that until I couldn't afford tires and gas on a weekend. And and then I went through the Skip Barber program with open wheel racing, I've got a little bit of racing in my belt, and I'd really like to pursue that next year with my Triumph. I really want to take my TR3 and prepare it and get it out on the track and vintage racing next year.
Well,
Bonneville is it. I'd love to go, Pete.
Yeah, I haven't been to Bonneville either, Pete.
Yeah, I
can't go.
Well, we've got some real issues in Bonneville. It's really it's a crime what's going on out there. Other than Mother Nature has thrown us a couple of curves the last 3 years, she hadn't, our track is becoming very short because the salt is disappearing, and we've got a pissing contest going with the guys that take the salt off the track, off the lake bed, and they take the potash out of it, which is, we don't care what they do with the potash is nothing.
I don't even know what that is, but they're basically,
yeah, potash is used in the chemical fertilizer business.
So these mining companies are going to the salt flats, and they're scraping it all up. They're taking some ingredient out of it, and the salt that's left over, they're just leaving it in a pile someplace, and they're not putting it back.
Yeah, they don't put it back, and it goes into some kind of brine. And when the brine dries out, then they just stack the stuff up. And we've had numerous contracts with different companies, and they kind of go after it for a couple of years, and then they somehow forget that they have contracts with us.
Yeah.
So they don't put it back on. And the sad part is if you go down the highway out of Wendover, and I can't remember the highway between Wendover and Salt Lake City, you look to the left, and when you're going east, you look to the left, and you see the lake bed, and you look to the right, and there's these big, huge brine ponds. And I'm talking big stuff. So all of our salt is on the south side of the freeway, and our thin dry lake bed is on the other side.
Yeah.
And so the SEMA is involved. There's a bunch of big companies and big organizations involved in a thing called Save the Salt. And they had a really good thing going until about 2005. Now, that's 10 years ago now, all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And the last 3 years, Mother Nature did put some water on the salt. And if our brine and our salt had been in place, we would have a beautiful race course. At the big end of the salt bed out at the 10-mile, it's actually from about the 7-mile now to the 10-mile, you can see the mud underneath it. It's brown.
How long is the whole deal? Like 13
when
miles?
When it's right, it's 15 miles.
15 miles.
But we can live with 10 or 11.
Yeah. Here it is to simplify it. Is the issue isn't the mining company doing the mining thing. That's fine because they're just taking something out of there, this potash that we really don't care about. And as far as racing is concerned, and but when they scrape it all up, they extract the potash out, and we just want them to put the salt, the remaining stuff that they're not using, back out onto the course, and they don't even need to like spread it over 15 miles. They just kind of can kind of do it at one end, and then Mother Nature takes its course, wind and water and everything else. It kind of spreads it nice and evenly. As we were talking earlier, it'd be like throwing a piece of butter in a pan and just kind of shaking the pan a little bit, and it'll spread itself out. You know, it's
when we get the,
you know, like pancake batter. It's like that's what we need them to do.
Yeah, when the monsoons come and the wind comes, because we get monsoon weather out there. In fact, it's amazing. I mean, if you haven't been in a storm out there, you can't imagine how the wind is. But when it rains and the wind comes and the temperature drops, it just literally smooths it out.
Yeah.
Like I say, the analogy of dropping butter in a hot frying pan is exactly what happens. And then when the summer comes, because it comes early, it dries out. And it's so flat you can see the curvature of the earth out there. You can see it.
Yeah.
It's a spectacular place.
I'm not going to pretend to know all of the details on this, but as you were saying, it's sort of the mining is happening on one side of the freeway and the racing would happen on the other side of the freeway, and there's just no mechanism in place of literally getting the remaining leftover salt across the street and onto where the racing would happen. It's not like they're using the land. It's not like, you know, like you're saying, trucks could move it over, some sort of conveyor belt system, build a bridge or something. Like, it takes some sort of effort. And the mining company, of course, is, you know, I don't know if they're doing something to help or they're just fighting the process. I don't want to make them out to be the bad guy, but basically it's not in their business model. They're like, well, our job is not to, you know, to bring this over and turn it into a racetrack. So somebody else needs to do that.
Yeah,
or somebody else needs to help do that. And I know it's gotten a lot more complicated over the years because it's not just, you know, why it sounds simple. It's like, why can't we just move the goddamn salt over to the other side of the, you know, to the other side of the freeway and start letting it do what it needs to do? But even lobbying the mining companies isn't always effective.
We can
the organization and SEMA people trying to raise money to see what would happen to there, but I don't know what's going on.
It needs to be an act of Congress.
And that's the funny thing is there's it seems like we've got a couple of guys that are trying to sit down at a table and going, hey man, what is it going to take to move this across the street? And nobody's coming up with a solution. Nobody's agreeing to anything. The company's, you know, maybe the mining company's going, it's not our problem. It's real expensive for us to do that. And that's not what our contract is.
We had a mining company that was pretty good. And I don't know about but they sold this.
Yeah.
They sold it to another mining company.
And this has happened like two or three times over several decades.
Yeah.
You know, you sell the company every 10, 15 years. Or what they do is they sign these leasing contracts for the land and everything where they can do their mining. Yeah. And then when those things expire, they try to sell the company and they move on.
I mean, if our listeners would, we'll post addresses and all that. But if the listeners would go to Bonneville Salt Flats.
Yes, SaveTheSalt.org is the website, SaveTheSalt.org. Go there, read a little bit more about it. We'd love to get you guys involved. And because it is, it's one of our oldest forms of racing.
Well, if you want to see something that's really grotesque, get up on Google Earth and get over Wendover and look at it from the satellite, and you cannot be the slime that's on the right side of that freeway. It is amazing.
Yeah.
It's all green and brown, and I mean, they've got a mess over there. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But it needs to have some kind of a Congress. I mean, the thing is, it's already saved. You know, they've saved it, but they're still ruining it. It just needs to be removed, you know, just. I hate the word just, but it needs to have some really serious.
And something long term, like we need to put something. That's again, like you're saying, like an active Congress. We need some sort of, legal involvement because we can start to fix this. And how do we make it sustainable? Let's fix this and make it last for another 100 years like it's been out there.
Well, I mean, if this was Yosemite, it would be different. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but this is Yosemite. So if we're going to, and if there was no racing anyway, it still needs, it's criminal what's going on out there. This is a landmark place. It needs to be saved. If we didn't put another car out there, it still needs to be saved.
So, actually, you bring that up. You say it's a landmark place. It actually is designated a historical landmark, right?
Yeah, of course.
But nobody's taking care of it. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah.
It's like, look at any of our, you know, our historical landmark buildings that we have all throughout California. Those, you know, those things need to be protected, and our national parks and stuff. And we've got this.
Yeah, see,
you know, it's been recognized as a historical landmark, and still nobody's taking care of it.
Yeah, and we're prepared to put the money up to take care of it if they never put a car on it.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing, because the organization and SEMA and groups that are involved have been raising money and getting the people ready to take care of it, but there's still no mechanism really in place to allow them to do it. And that's insane to me as well. It's like, all right, well, we've got some money. We've raised some money. We've got some money. We've got people. We've got, you know, petitions from everybody that says save this thing. And there's no, like, mechanism to make it happen.
No.
And that's – I don't know where we're lacking in the leadership side of things. Or maybe it's just in the lawmaking side of it that says now this is how to do it. But – I can see that the guy needs more help.
Yeah, the guy that's actually one of the spearheads of this is a guy named Russ Dean, and he is the legal counsel for SEMA. He also has a 250-mile-an-hour car that he races. And
that's awesome.
I would suggest that the next time he's in town, we put him on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, we should bring in there. I want to talk more about it.
He's a great interview because the guy's a lunatic, so he's really he fits right in.
Hear that? The lawyer we're using is a lunatic.
Yeah, so we don't have anybody on the show that's not a lunatic. And so Russ Dean, I mean, I could get him on here and he could give us 15 minutes of a real quick and bring us right up to speed, because it does need to be preserved.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
All right, well, guys,
we could definitely do that, you know, and try to advocate some of that, you know.
Yeah,
it's, you know, look, it's something I still haven't had a chance to go out there, and the last few years we even talked about it, and there hasn't been any racing. You know, there's one year was rain, and now it's like there's not enough salt, and there's not enough. You know,
all of us that are, I've got a car ready to go. We're just over at Chrisman's place. They got a car ready to go. My neighbor that lives across the street from me is the old drag race. He's a Coolin Olson. It's Carl Olson. They have a 300-mile-an-hour car ready to go.
Wow.
There's all these million-dollar cars sitting around. George Poteet is building a 450-mile-an-hour car or 500-mile-an-hour car. And he put his on. He put his other car on its lid last time they ran.
Ouch.
Yeah, ouch is a good one. We put our car on its lid 4 years ago at 250. So we built a new one, and everybody's dying to get out there. I mean, this is something.
Dying to get out there. Maybe change. If you guys keep flipping cars, maybe we should call it something else.
Well,
everybody's very excited.
Yeah, we're
enthusiastic.
Excited to go. So, I mean, you talk about having a show.
Yeah.
This would be.
I would love for us to go out there and do a shift and steer from a Bonneville event,
because
that would be fun.
You know,
I don't know where we plug in our microphones and we get power.
Awesome.
This is a high. We do the deal. It's full kill.
Yeah.
I mean, our place is.
Yeah, we got to bring our Winnebago or something.
Oh, no, we go. Oh, no, man. It's.
To do a show.
This is the Hilton. It's awesome. I mean, we cater food and it's.
Yeah.
You'd love it.
Okay. I'm in.
Yeah, we're tarps.
You had me at food.
We got full tarps and food, and we got three motorhomes, and
that'd be so fun.
Yeah, I'd love to check it out.
No, you guys, you'd have. I'll tell you what, you would be coming back.
Yeah,
maybe
Aaron will bring a car as soon as you fix the front end of his car and not make it dangerous.
You'd find something in the stable to put a roll cage in and bring it out.
Oh yeah, I love
sure.
the. No, I'm building my Mustang Cobra. I talked to Bodie Stroud. He's doing some work on it. You know, that's probably, you know, maybe it's going to be a really fancy build, but I got no problem with just wrapping that thing in tape.
If you clean it every day, you can't hurt it.
Yeah.
You cannot hurt it. You spray the whole car with WD-40 and you can't hurt it.
Yeah, I'll just
you can't hurt it unless you put it on its side.
That's it. And see what it can do.
You got to remember that the whole thing is that these cars weigh like 4,000 to 5,000 pounds.
Yeah, not my car.
The coefficient friction of the tire is only at 2 inches.
Yeah.
And you're trying to put 1,400 horsepower to the deck.
For the big cars, like I could just go out there.
Like our car.
Yeah.
And our car will go 250.
What is it? What is the car?
Our car is a chopped. It's an HHR. It's about this tall.
Yeah. So you know, couple feet tall. When you hold your hand up, by the way, Pete, on a podcast, nobody can see what the hell you're doing.
Aaron, you can see that, can't you, Aaron?
Yeah. Aaron can see it from the call. It's about 3 feet.
About three feet tall. Yeah.
Yeah.
HHR. Do you mean one of those little wagon truck things?
Yeah, it's been we got.
Why'd you use that? Those things suck.
It's got 18 inches out of it. I'll send you a picture of it. It doesn't suck.
Yeah, please.
I've seen pictures of your race phone. We'll have to grab some photos. We'll have to put them up on our Facebook page. But
this one's got this engine's 1,200 horse out of 155 inches.
Now, have you brought a hot rod or a muscle car out there and maybe prep it a little bit differently
As long as it passes safety, you can bring anything you want.
Okay. And then you can just see. Like, you don't have to go set some record. If you just want to see if your muscle car can do 130,
you can do whatever you want. They put you in a class, and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. All right. Maybe we should talk about that. Maybe I kind of want to see, like, if I'm going to build a car.
You could put a three-point cage in that Jag.
Yeah.
Put the tires on, proper tires, put fire equipment in it, and run that car.
Yeah. Wow.
That's right. You bought a Jag, didn't you?
It's a 99 Jag. I'm going to sell it.
What happened to the Alpha?
I got the Alpha.
Daily driver, huh?
No, I've got the Alpha. Well, the Alpha's, you know, the Alpha's down, you know. Look, I know you're surprised to hear that the Alpha's not running right now. I went to Goodwood, and I came back, and it had a lot of trouble starting. And I was like, all right, well, if it's got trouble starting, it's a good time to just go through and, you know, maybe fuel pump and fuel filters and a fuel pressure regulator and coil plugs, wires, you know. And, you know, and then I got jammed up in one of these things where, like, every website in the world is telling me this is the part number for the Bosch fuel pressure regulator, right? I buy it, get it, pull the regulator off the car. It's not the right one. The one I buy, the one that all the websites say to have, by the way, has a threaded fitting on it. And the one I have on the car
is a barb.
It's an O-ring and it pushes in and it snaps in. And then there's like two set screws that, you know, kind of. So now the good news is when I took the old one off, it has the Bosch part number on it, right? Oh, so I just type in the part number and I order it. And of course, you know, like the website says, this does not fit your car. I'm like, yeah, but this is what's on it. So somewhere there's some disconnect. And so I just ordered it. Hopefully it'll be here soon and I'll get that back on the road right away.
Right.
Also, you know, I didn't really have air working, so it was kind of hot. So I drive the Jag with the air. And then as it starts to cool off here, I'll have the Alpha.
Hey, Aaron, aren't you shocked, just absolutely shocked that Alpha didn't start?
Yeah, you know, I kind of am because I have a 76 that I just started up after sitting for, I don't know, a month and a half. It fired right up, and I moved it back to the shop front. And
so you
moved
fired
stuff
it
around.
Nah, you got lucky.
You fired it and it moved.
It fired right up.
But here's the thing is. Well, I got into the car, and then I was like, oh, I really want to drive it now. It's so much fun to drive. Yeah.
Well, they are fun.
Yeah. So I'm going to take it out. I'm going to do some suspension work, take it out to the canyons and drop the top or something. And
they're a lot of fun to drive.
I'm taking my Roadster out tomorrow. Just drive around.
Nice.
Yeah.
Spend a little time in the afternoon. We got a canyon run at our place. It's just
– yeah.
The road is – well, first of all, you got to get by the motorcycles, but the road is perfect. There's not a – pothole in it. It's all bermed and just.
Yeah.
And actually, the bike guys really do respect us. It's nice.
All right. Well, wear a hat. Wear some sunscreen, buddy.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Do the right thing for your.
The right thing for my bald forehead.
All right. So look, we're out of time here. So let's do this, guys. SaveTheSalt.org. Please check that out. Anything you can do to help these guys,
do that.
That would be great. We would appreciate that. And thanks for listening. Go to iTunes. Give us a nice little rating. Tell a friend. That's the only way these shows grow is by word of mouth. We would appreciate that. We've got a fancy new website. If you haven't seen that, shiftandsteer.com. And our man Rick's been doing awesome graphics and posting the shows. And check us out. iTunes,
good job,
and Stitcher,
Rick.
And, our social media. We're all over there.
Yeah.
At Shift Steer Media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
We're on air. Yeah. Is there anything we don't have?
Pete's got gigs coming up.
We're doing gigs. I got a gig.
Careful.
I'm being really careful. I have to be.
You're naughty, man. Naughty.
I know. I came from a bad place, brother.
Yeah.
Too much time in the core.
Yeah. What's coming up for you? What's your next gig?
I got a gig in. What's going on at SEMA?
I don't know yet. We're figuring out. I mean, I'll be at SEMA. You guys will all be at SEMA.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're doing this from SEMA yet, but
I want to do this.
I tell you
from
what. I'm going to go ahead and just a little shameless plug here. I am doing the SEMA show and my other show, CarCast, with Adam Carolla. We're going to be doing CarCast live from the Motovicity booth on Thursday at 1 o'clock. That'll be like from 1 to 2. And the Motovicity booth. Then right after that, we're going to swing over to the Takiko Shocks booth for an autograph session. It'll be myself and Adam, which should be kind of fun. And I think we're going to bring one of the cars out. We're going to bring one of the, maybe the BRE, the Brock Racing 510, Datsun 510. That might
be
kind of cool.
Are you talking about Pete Brock?
Pete Brock, yeah.
You know, yeah. I talked to Pete twice on the phone this last week, last week and a week, right?
Yeah.
And God, we have a great time.
Yeah, great. Oh, we saw him in Goodwood too, in the UK.
He is just,
You know, what we're trying to do is I don't want to spoil it or anything, but we're trying to get Pete Brock to be our guest on the show CarCast live at SEMA, and we're just trying to work with Pete and his wife Gail.
You should be able to do that.
Just his schedule. We're just trying to work with Pete and his wife Gail.
If you're going to have that, I want to be in the audience.
Yeah. You guys got to come down. he's gonna heckle us, throw tomatoes. Pete's gonna throw tomatoes at us. It'll be fun. So if anybody's going to SEMA, check that out. If you're not going to SEMA, that will be a podcast as well, so you can definitely hear that interview. I know we're gonna have some great stories from that. So that's coming up in about a month. Aaron,
that's
how are you, buddy? Doing anything fun? What's next before we close out?
I've got a whole lot of stuff planned. I'll have Red Voodoo there with Kicker Audio, and doing some appearances with Kicker and Lincoln and House of Color and Awada and all that good stuff. So we'll be busy. I'll be filming and documenting everything for Shift and Steer, and hopefully we'll be driving some cars this year.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that, and I'll be towing Red Voodoo with my new truck.
I'll be healthy this year.
Yeah. Pete's got a new knee. He's got a fancy new knee. That was his surgery, by the way. He didn't have brain surgery or anything. The knee just got some – Pete had some knee surgery, and he's like, I don't know if it was fucking worth it or not, but he's like, I'm in.
That
it's good. Yeah. And look, the SEMA show is an industry trade show, so you can't really get in. But Friday, the last day – they do this SEMA Ignited thing. It's a massive car show and a little bit of a parade kind of thing. So if you do want to go out there and see a bunch of cool cars and enjoy Vegas for the weekend, get out there Friday. And at the end of SEMA, when it closes at 5 o'clock, I think,
actually,
4 o'clock.
Actually, it's at 4.
Yeah, 4 o'clock. And then it turns into a massive public car show. I think it's going to be across the street from the convention center this year. And all the cars, or most of the cars that are on the SEMA show floor that you can't see, they all come out and do a little bit of a parade, and they all go to this event, right? So you can see the coolest cars in the world that were, you know, people have been spending the last couple of years building.
You know, it's become now, I think last year was the first year, it's the largest car show in the world now.
And they've only done it once.
Wow.
SEMA Ignited.
SEMA is the largest car show in the world.
I'm telling you, it's almost 1.2 million square feet under roof. It's in the hallways and everything. It's going to be massive. So we've got another month for that. So start making your plans now. Go out to SEMA. Check out CarCast. Shift and Steer guys will be out there. Tons of cars. And come out for Friday. But thank you, guys. And until next time, for Pete Shaporis and Brad Fanshaw and Aaron Hagar, I'm Matt, the moderator, at DeAndrea. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
See you. Listen to you soon.
And your gig.